Hi, I'm Nick, on a mission for Morning Coffee in River North, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Nick. Hopefully you get that morning coffee in River North. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is wonderful to be here with you today for show number 970. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So hello to Bob. And again, it is wonderful to be here with you today. And a lot to do on the show. Like, this is an action-packed show. Not that the other ones aren't, but boy, a lot to do. We will learn about some efforts to limit what some inmates can read in the Danville Correctional Facility in Danville, Illinois. In fact, we'll talk with someone who's going there tomorrow. Also, some new music from the local funk, jazz, soul band Ascendant, and they've got a show coming up at the City Winery in the not too distant future. And the Secret History of Chicago Music profiles the Secret History of Chicago Music. It is a very meta edition of that segment, as the Secret History of Chicago Music in the Chicago Reader turns 20. Stick around. It's meta. It's informative music. I love it. In 2019, it was reported that 200 books were removed from the Danville Correctional Center in Danville, Illinois. These books were part of the curriculum for the Education Justice Project, which offers University of Illinois classes for certain men in the prison. According to NPR, quote, "The books were to be used in American literature, urban communities and policy, gender in society, and critical race theory classes, in addition to Education Justice Project handbooks that are handed out to students at convocation," end quote. The warden at the time determined that these books in the facility were, quote unquote, racially motivated books available to inmates and had them removed. V. Harrison is the author of the book Hood Healing, interviews with some of Chicago's most prolific voices in media and culture. She is planning on making a trip to the Danville Correctional Center tomorrow with copies of her book for the inmates, and she is here with us today to talk all about this. V, welcome back to Outside the Loop. It's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. Excited to be back.
Yeah, so you were here a few years ago talking about that book, Hood Healing. Yeah, absolutely. And so just briefly here, in case we forgot, what is your book all about?
Well, to refresh the memories of your WGN radio listeners, my book covers intergenerational trauma in Black Chicago. And it was really prompted by the murder of my very own brother, Daryl Harrison Jr. And 4 years later, we have no answers to his murder, but this book is still going. People are still very interested in why the murder occurred and why it is connected to the trauma of our upbringing in Chicago.
You know, it is like a tale of two Chicagos here, and we've talked about this on the show before, but not every neighborhood, not every, certainly every racial or ethnic group has received the same opportunities and benefits. And so that really has a long-lasting impact, a generational impact on these groups of people. That's kind of what you're getting at here with your book.
That's exactly right. You know, the impact of trauma on Black people in Chicago is something that we're starting to talk about, but we haven't been talking about it long enough. We're talking education policy issues, food deserts, gang and violence issues. Within our community, what we have found is direct impact of the policy issues in this city. And it's really detrimental to Black people who are often left behind.
And we have to keep talking about it, and we have to keep educating folks about this, because this is so real. So That's why I'm thinking about what's going on here with the Danville Correctional Facility here. So can you just give us some more context here? These books,
absolutely.
These books that were removed. I mean, the phrase that we keep using here is that, well, these books were racially motivated. So what are these books about? What are we even talking about here?
You know, one of the books were books that one of the parents will come in as they visit other inmates and try to transition and make young people understand why mother or father, uncle or aunt are incarcerated. You have titles by Black prolific authors just simply about the policy around the penal system. How ironic that they believe that these books didn't belong in the hands of the very same inmates from the very same neighborhoods in which we're talking impact. Right? So these books, 200 plus books, where many of them were removed. We've never talked about this since 2019. Danville reached out to me. They've got a hold of Hood Healing. They reached out to me and they invited me. I found out later on that these books were banned. As a Black author, Mike, as a Black journalist, as a Black cultural staple, I take the banning of books very personally. So I looked into it to find that they were banning books that they claim are racially charged. What does that mean exactly? That Black men that are inmates at Danville can't read about their upbringing as Black men? Hmm. Are we calling them inmates or are we calling them slaves?
And it's something that when you think of it in that context here, right, we know that there is this disproportionate number of people of color who are incarcerated. And there are, I mean, a variety of reasons for that. The history of this country being one of the primary reasons here, but also the stigmas and stereotypes that exist because of how we have classified each other based on how we look. And so some of those books that were in the Danville Correctional Center, they get at that. And if you are impacted by the penal system here in the United States, it's important to be able to see that, hey, people have studied this. We know that this is an issue and we're trying to address it. But it seems for whatever reason, they decided to say, well, no, these men can't learn that. And I don't know why that is, you know?
I don't think to say that something is racially charged is enough reason or justification to say we can't educate ourselves about ourselves. We can't educate because we're incarcerated. It almost seems as if we're trying to keep something from these inmates. And if that is the case, what is it that we're trying to keep? We have Black authors that spoke out in 2019 when these books were removed. One of them, Jacqueline Woodson, she was the author of Visiting Day. It was a huge book for families that came into the Danville Correctional Center to visit their families, something that you'd read to a child, if you will. Bill Bigelow, he was the editor of Rethinking Our Classrooms, Teaching for Equity and Justice. Maya Schnooner, the Locked Down, Locked Out author, all of these authors speaking to the penal system, why would we remove these books? It does not seem coincidental, Mike. It seems like a strategy to keep Black people from reading the important content that needs to be poured into their lives.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing that Danville reached out to you.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't sound like we ever got a really good
an ending to this, right?
Yeah, right. Like, why are these books removed in the first place? You know, we never got a great answer. Oh, they're racially motivated, whatever that means. But
now let me go back to the very beginning of the invite.
Yeah.
There's a young woman who reached out to Domel T. Pungo. You know Domel T. pretty well.
Yeah.
Domel T. has been on your show, and Domel T. wrote the foreword to my book. When she reached out to Domel T., she is related to one of the people that are part of a program there at Danville. So to be honest with you, Mike, and I am saying this for the whole world to hear, it is very possible that my invite has come unparalleled to the banning of these books, meaning the people that invited me may not be aware that I am aware that 200 books have been removed.
Well, you're going there tomorrow. And
I'm
so,
going there tomorrow. They're going to know tomorrow, right?
They're going to know tomorrow. You are going to have some copies of your books with you. So
I am.
What's your goal for tomorrow's visit?
You know, tomorrow's visit, really, when I talk about my book, when I talk about the murder of my brother, when I talk about my upbringing on the West Side, the goal is to simply create relatable lifestyles with people that are living different than me. Because what's the common goal? to let people know that we have a shared trauma among Black people in Chicago. Hey, I'm in the suburbs. You're incarcerated in Danville. However, we both had drug addictions in our family. We all have mental health issues in our family. We need to talk about this comfortably in a way that we all can relate. So I want those inmates that I'm going to see tomorrow to know I understand you. I am not here in your shoes. I am not serving prison time, but I, like you, have a shared trauma and we can relate to one another. And I think that's the message I'm wanting to leave behind, Mike.
And I think when it comes to kind of really thinking about who is incarcerated, there is this out of sight, out of mind mentality that we have. Mm-hmm. And hey, we can't see what's going on in there. They made a mistake, so they've got to pay their dues now to society. And I think we also jump to, oh, well, if everyone's incarcerated in there, they must have done really, really awful things. Whereas mm-hmm. you have got some folks that maybe that were in there for sort of lesser violations, but, you know, they're still human beings. And is the goal here to get better? Is the goal here to rehabilitate or strictly to punish? And I think that goes to kind of how we think about the prison system and maybe how we have to rethink the prison system. If we're trying to get better here, then we have to really hope that everyone gets better, you know?
Absolutely. And we have to rethink the prison system and its impact on the community as a whole, Mike. So, you know, a very huge element of hood healing, my book, is empathy, right? You know, treating everyone as if they have the same human blood as you, despite where you're from, despite how much money you make, despite if you're Black or white, if you're from the Austin community in Chicago or the Oak Park community in Chicago. We all bleed red. And one thing that I really want to get across when I am there at my book talk tomorrow in Danville is to let the gentleman know that you too have a story that is worth someone listening to, just like I did. Just like I was able to write down my grievances in hood healing, they have an opportunity to take in these stories, educate themselves with these books, you know, and then giving them access back to books, because I'm not certain the materials that they have now that those 200 books have been removed. It's almost been 6 years. So I don't know if they're reading TV guides or comic books, but I know that the solid content inside of my book for an inmate in prison is important. Hood healing has helped me see myself and my trauma. I've had many, many recommendations of the book, award-winning, people saying that it's made them see themselves and their trauma. And it's a start to a really important conversation, Mike. You know, trauma in Chicago and its impact on Black people goes way back to those slave ships. And you and I have talked about that before.
Yeah.
You know, some of these things that we are seeing are simply things that our ancestors have survived. So here we are, talking about race issues, economic differences, class issues. These are all things we thought our ancestors escaped. And so those people in Danville Correctional Center have a need to hear those stories. And I dare leadership deny that. And I'll say this on the radio for everyone to hear, Mike. I really dare them to ban my book. I dare them.
Yeah, well, look, V, good luck tomorrow. I mean, I think what you're doing here is really important because this is stuff that we all need to be thinking about, especially those who have been directly impacted by the justice system here in the United States. And if we want a copy of your book, it's on Amazon, right?
My book is always on Amazon and online at Barnes & Noble, $19.99 online.
There we go. The book is called Hood Healing, interviews with some of Chicago's most prolific voices in media and culture. The author is Chicago-based journalist V. Harrison. She's going to Danville Correctional Center tomorrow in Danville, Illinois, with copies of her book. Hey, V, I really appreciate the time. Thanks for bringing some light to this issue and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. Thanks for always taking time to hear the narrative. I really appreciate that.
Let's get into talking about some local music right now from the band Ascendant. They've been around for over 20 years here in Chicago, and coming up Wednesday, June 11th, they are performing at City Winery. That's 1200 West Randolph in the West Loop neighborhood in Chicago. And of course, we can check out the website ascendantmusic.com. Kale Amboya is a keyboardist in the band and a vocalist. He's also producer and songwriter. He's pretty busy, and he is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Kale, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. You got it. Great to have you here. So this band, Ascendant, I think the sound is so cool. I mean, you've got that funk in there. You got some soul. It's really smooth, just really cool improvisation. So tell us about the origins of this band, Ascendant, because you've been doing this now for over 20 years with this group.
It really started just from my own desire to have express music of my own. Cause in the 90s, I was playing in various cover bands and jazz fusion and so forth. But there was a little bit more that I personally wanted to say, and I kind of gathered some of the friends that I've had for throughout my career to see, hey, you all want to do this with me? And they said, some said, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, because I'm leaving like space and room for us all to kind of express ourselves with the music that's coming through, and most of them are collaborators, fellow songwriters that I've been working with for over 20 years. But we gathered together and just decided, we could probably make a go of this. It's not going to hurt us too much. Little did we know that it's such a long journey. It's the point from A to B is not a straight line by any stretch,
right?
And up and down we went just to move 2 inches. But that's the journey, and in actuality, some of that journey is actually gives you song ideas. It gives you things to sing about. It gives you life to lead.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, what I love about the band, you do have that really just tight rhythm section. Like I said, it's smooth, but there's great harmonies. There's great improvisation. I think that's part of this too. I know, especially live, that you like to mix it up a little bit, and there is room for that interplay. And the folks in your band are so talented, I think it's really just a lot of fun to kind of experience where you're going to go, because sometimes you don't quite know at the beginning, but again, it's that journey of getting there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right about the improvisation when we perform live. I always kind of want to leave space for that, because the music is kind of the recorded songs, kind of a blueprint of what we would do, and just to change it up for us, so we're not bored playing the things every night.
We get to
experiment and take it some different places. And you're also right. These people are just far beyond what it is that I would imagine it to be. They just take it and we just give it so much life. It's just top notch. And I just feel really blessed and wonderful to be able to share the stage with them.
And you are sharing the stage coming up on June 11th at City Winery. That's 1200 West Randolph in Chicago. It's a wonderful room. And tell us about the show, because this is very exciting. To play this room coming up here, just kind of getting us into summer. Tell us about the gig.
We're doing it in support of the new single that we're releasing. It's called "Love Saved My Life." It's a brand new single, and it's taken from the soon to be released album that will be released in the fall called "Illuminate Red." But we're going to be doing that song, like kind of premiering that song. We got a nice, interesting arrangement for that. That we just kind of came up with recently, like last week. So again, that improvisation thing is coming into play.
You
doing that and a bunch of songs that we've been doing over the past 20 years for our career. So it's all of this stuff is stimulating with this show, and we're planning on taking it on the road to various cities. Lots of these different people have been asking for us, so we're finally trying to bring that not just in Chicago, but everywhere.
And you're taking it on the road. That's exciting. But playing here in Chicago, I know you guys have been doing this now for over 20 years, but you know, I love talking to musicians, asking musicians about playing around Chicago and Chicagoland, because we're still it, man. We're still such a destination, and we have options
Absolutely.
To play, you know. And how many other places can say that they have as many places to play as Chicago? And I know that places have shrunk and atrophied and some have gone away, but we still have it, don't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, even though some of them don't, and, you know, some Ascended is played in some places that just don't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
We've been at it for such a long time. But there's always another place that comes up to take its place. And from smaller clubs to some of the bigger venues, it's a very interesting place. Play. I mean, and you really have to know your stuff, because Chicago folks, they are no nonsense. Like, you have to be like, are you going to play this song? You better do it right. What you go do? Go ahead. You know? Yeah.
Well, Chicago loves you, and Ascendant playing here coming up on Wednesday, June 11th at City Winery, 1200 West Randolph. We could go to ascendantmusic.com, and really, Kale, you all sound great. I mean, keep doing what you're doing, man. This new album coming out in the not-too-distant future here, Illuminate Red, and so much good stuff going on with you. I'm excited to see where you go next, and just keep rocking, because you're awesome. Kale Mboya, the keyboardist and one of the vocalists for the band Ascendant. Man, thanks for talking to us today, and keep it up.
Sure. Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Some will tell you that they really love you so. Some will tell you that they love your mind. Some will say they never wanna let you go. Some are plotting, planning, design.
Oh yeah! Once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave. He's the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music strip in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. He's a local musician, music historian, and artist. And I just want to say congratulations to Steve Krakow, the one and only Plastic Crime Wave, because this is 20 years of Secret History of Chicago Music in the Reader. And Steve, you're normally profiling musicians. This is a special edition of really the Reader just in general, but of certainly of your column, because it's kind of meta. You're taking a look back on 20 years, your origin story. It's all about you, man.
I was a little scared, hesitant about making it all about me, but sure enough, my editor, longtime editor, Philip Montoro, has been with me from the beginning on this, was like, no, this is all about you. I want to hear the stories. We got to give it to them. So we went that direction, and then yes, this is indeed the secret history of the secret history.
Very meta. Look at that. How about
that? Look at that. And yeah, 20 years. Where did it go?
Where did it go? So I should say that the music that we're hearing right now from Ronaldo Domino, and here's why, because coming up on Saturday, June 14th, it is the Secret History of Chicago Music 20th Anniversary Celebration at the Hideout, and Ronaldo Domino will be there. He'll be performing a late set, right?
Yeah. We're going to kind of do earlier in the day. We're sort of making it like two separate events, but if people want to stick around, there'll be like a little food truck in between. But Ronaldo's going to be earlier. We're going to have some panels, and we'll be talking to like some of the artists that have been covered over the years, some of the editors, the reader, Philip, who I just mentioned, and Salem, who you had on the show, is going to moderate one. And we will talk to Ronaldo about those days. And then later on, he's got a hot backing band, always puts on a great show at the Hideout, and the Heart of Chicago DJs are going to spin all Chicago sounds. I ordered it. No deviation. All Chicago.
I love it.
Covers of songs by Chicago artists could be allowed, but we'll see. We'll see, you know, but so pretty excited about that. At the Hideout, who we had a Secret History concert series there over the years and had some great artists play as well. So it's the best place for it.
I love it. The Hideout, 1354 West Wabansia in Chicago. That is Saturday, June 14th. And things get underway at 5 o'clock, but then there's the later event at 10 o'clock. Food truck. It's going to be great. So we should all go to that. And Steve, just kind of looking back here in 20 years, I mean, you got this going in 2005. And this, I like how you write about here in the Reader this week that you didn't quite know what to call it. Was it a comic strip? Was it an info strip? We don't really call that either these days what you do, but
no, all these attempts failed, by the way, you know, all these. Yeah.
So you say here that your first pitch to the Reader was vague and half baked. And then you kind of came at them again with an example of what you had in mind. And that's when they saw something in you and they said, yeah, this could work.
Yeah, huge, huge props to Allison True, who was the editor then and like sort of worked on me in developing a format. And in the early days, it was much more of like a sort of looked like a trading card. You know, it was like a big picture of the band with a little bit of text. And as you said, it sort of changed and grown into a little bit more of a column over the years. I mean, we didn't even have a word count in the old days because I did it by hand, so we weren't really counting them. But, you know, it was probably like 50, and it's sometimes these days they're well over 1,000 words. So that part has really grown since those days. But yeah, as I said, I used to write everything in by hand as sort of a comic book guy, you know, who grew up kind of doing that comic book lettering and stuff. So I used to do it all by hand. And it was a real pain in the keister to edit and liquid paper stuff. So it's there's a number of reasons why it's sort of changed and grown over the years.
Right. It used to be, like you say, kind of like this comic book. You were writing the words out by hand, and you've always been drawing your version, your interpretation of the artist or the band that you're profiling. So that's something that's pretty much been the same. And you do such a good job at it. And I'm amazed at this, because even though now the text is typing, are you still, because I know you would, I don't mean this as a put down, but you would say that you're kind of a Luddite, right? I mean, you.
Oh, yeah. Recovering Luddite is usually the term I use if I, you know, I'm forced to, but yes.
So you were going to the copy shop, so like your local Kinko's or wherever, to resize this stuff. Are you still doing that?
I am still doing that. I still do that. And you know, this is the real kicker, is that Kinko's, aka FedEx, they just changed out all their copy machines. Literally, the one down my block that I've been going to for 20 years, as of today, is substituting new machines. The old Canons are going out. It's like symbolic or something. The Canons are going out, and whatever the new cruddy brand is coming in, and I am going to have to change my process a little bit, or seek out places with old copy machines. So it's strange, but it's just easier, quicker process for me, how I've always sort of done it, you know, just like I can cut and paste something with a glue stick in about 5 minutes, or I can fart around on a computer for 3 hours and try to do it and it ain't gonna look as good. So that's just, you know, I kind of came out of zines and stuff, and right. That's sort of how the Secret History thing sort of came about. Two is that, you know, I did a zine where I did everything by hand, you know, so that, you know, that said, for, you know, I do a lot of illustration stuff, and that is still how I work. If I need to enlarge or reduce something, so might have to adapt. We're gonna see what happens here.
Well, there is something to be said about doing this by hand, because today we have computers, obviously, that help us out, but it maybe takes away a little bit of the humanity. And now we have artificial intelligence that maybe does everything for us. Who knows? But what you're doing is really a human thing. And so you're doing this by hand, and you're still doing that to a degree. But that's kind of like the art piece. But then there's the investigative reporting piece here, because all of the musicians and the bands that you profile, these aren't like necessarily really popular bands. That's the whole idea of the Secret History of Chicago Music. What don't we know about some of these bands that maybe we kind of remember from back in the day, but never got huge? So you've really got to dig. There's not a ton of stuff online about these bands.
No, I mean, you know, in the earlier days, maybe I covered, you know, more of like first string obscurities, you know, artists who sold some records, but, you know, weren't as well known. And obviously, as the years have gone on, you know, I love digging and finding stuff that, yeah, is not necessarily available. Just, you know, you can pull up the Wikipedia page and there it all is for you, you know. So, like, I like, it's time consuming, but I like interviewing the bands and getting the story from them themselves and doing extra research. And I got books here I actually look at, you know, sort of research guides and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, and as the years go on, you know, breaking a story like, you know, of a band that, like, there's no music online, there's no pictures online, there's nothing. That's sort of my favorite, you know, because it's a story that, you know, a lot, most people haven't heard.
That's right. And you actually are responsible for kind of a reunion here. The band Ono, they got together because, or I should say got back together because of what you were doing with the Secret History.
Yeah, it was like a weird, just a weird sequence of events. You know, I had this record by them. I got it in college when I was in Champaign, probably in the 90s, and just wondered, what is this really otherworldly music by this band? One guy, members got a huge afro, and, you know, one guy's named just Travis in the band, and I'm like, why is this
like Cher? It's just Travis.
Just Travis. And I'm like, what is the story here? And then Al Jurgensen's name was on it from Ministry, and I'm like, okay, there's a story here. And sure enough, I, you know, finally figured out who Travis was. I figured out we were in an art show together. But I didn't know it years before, and that P. Michael, the bass player, lived like 4 blocks from me on Rockwell. Well, I found, I found a silver dollar. Got back together, got up and running after that, started making records, recruiting new members, touring, getting like articles about them. And it was really gratifying, you know, to see. And also, you know, they're very contented, freaky folks making contentedly freaky music.
I love that. I love that. And look, we could keep going here. You have an extensive piece in this week's Chicago Reader about the Secret History of Chicago Music column. And of course, for the last 10, 11 years, you and I have been doing this segment here on Outside the Loop on WGN Radio and the podcast. And I know you started with Nick DiGilio way back
when. And you
when.
Were there for that.
I
you
was there for that, yeah.
You've been there almost since the beginning, because Nick hit me up for an interview, I feel like, in the first year. And you were what, producer?
I was producing Andy Herman and I, yeah.
Yeah, you and Andy were producing. You guys came over and met with me. I believe you brought over some brewskis and we hung out.
That's right. Again, that's how it should be.
I remember this. I don't remember what I had for breakfast today, but I remember this, you know, that, yeah, that, you know, that was probably like you know, 2006 or something like that, you know? So, and we've certainly, you've been there a while in a form.
Yeah, it's been great, man, to see this journey evolve, this journey, as you call it. And look, it's so great to see what you do here. And I know that you're going to keep doing it. And I we just scratched the surface of this because there's so much more to get to. And it's a fascinating read what you put together here about the secret history of Chicago music and the reader.
It's a long one, too. He upped my word count for this one. Speaking of, this one's at 2,300, I believe. So, woo! And I have written longer ones. I've covered a few friends who passed away, and those obviously get very personal, and I was granted a little more space for some of those. But yeah, this is going to be one of the longer ones on record here to sort of capture everything.
We also want to mention that you are drawing the cover for this week's Chicago Reader. So you do the whole thing.
First time ever. They actually were like, what do you want to do for this special one? And I got to admit, I was like, could I do a cover? Could I? You know, it's been 20 years. I feel like I've earned maybe the right to do a reader cover. I was never asked, or, you know, it just never came up. I'm doing my column every other week for 20 years. So, you know, it never really came up before. And they were like, yes, we're going to make that happen.
I love it. I love the reader. I love your column. I mean, obviously, I get to talk to you on my show about it, and you're so talented, man, what you do, the drawing, the music, the knowledge, the history, the fun that you have. I think that comes through when you and I talk, just how much fun all this stuff is and how much people just love music in Chicago, man. There's so much good stuff out there, and everyone should go out to the Hideout on Saturday, June 14th. That's 1354 West Wabansia, a fantastic cozy room, because that's the 20th anniversary of the Secret History of Chicago Music celebration. And Ronaldo Domino will be there. There's a panel early on, food trucks, and then also Jackie Ross will be there. We'll go out with some Jackie Ross tunes because she rules.
Come meet some legends.
Yeah, come meet some legends. And you get to see Steve Krakow. Hey, dude, I love you, man. Congratulations. Keep it going, because we need you in these crazy times that we're in. And you're all about Chicago, man. I love it.
Back at you, man. I mean, aren't you about to hit a big anniversary year, too?
Big 20 next year, and then 1,000 shows in December. Yeah.
Insane. It's all we can do, man. Keep plugging away and keep pushing and supporting Chicago music.
And that'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 970 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN Radio studio. Have a wonderful week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.